And that was a wee bit of a musical interlude. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You've been listening to October 1996 interviews on the street here on Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. Coming up now, we have some of Berkeley's finest poetry from Berkeley poet Julia Vinograd. Julia has published more than 40 books. She's a street poet who's lived in Berkeley for the last 30, 35 years. She's also known as the Bubble Lady, and you can find her hanging out at the Med selling her book for $3 a pop, probably one of the best deals in town. And she just made her first tape called Eye of the Hand. Here are a few poems from Berkeley and from Julia. The first poem is, I believe, cut off. I think it starts with, I hate poetry. So here we go.
The way a junkie hates the fix he can't afford and will have to hustle for, and often enough won't even get a rush from, just keep off the horrors for another hour. I hate poetry the way a married couple who don't believe in divorce hate each other. I hate poetry the way Alcoholics Anonymous hates liquor and has meetings about it. I hate poetry the way an atheist hates God and shakes his fist at the empty hole in the sky. And the more poetry I hear, the more I hate it, and the more I write it. Here I am. For the Berkeley Inn where I lived for 15 years being torn down. The wrecking ball swinging against the bricks as big as Crazy George's shaved head. When she took a heavy stick on full moon nights, banged on all the doors, and bellowed for quiet like a charging refrigerator. The cops always came when George had a quiet attack. Heavy shoulders, muscled neck, it took three of them to haul her off, and she was back the next morning. As the bricks tumble, she roars from the ruins, "Quiet! I said quiet, you assholes!" It's going down, the watching crowd gasps with each blow. It can't be fixed anymore. Not even Charlie can fix it. Charlie, the desk clerk mechanic whose wife ran off with a cop so he became a Stalinist. And the landlady fired him each time he got drunk, but she always hired him back because the elevator was in love with him and wouldn't work for anyone else. He had a dozen TV sets in his room that he took happily apart and put reluctantly back together. And he was kind to me. I look at the plaster dust. There should be records of that kindness set in plaster like fossil leaves. But it's all gone now. And Florence, the first landlady, skinny, tough, always furious. We said she'd run a whorehouse in Texas, which is the highest compliment tenants can give a landlady. She told me if I went out into some riot, she wasn't letting me back in. So, I stalked out nobly, collapsed from the tear gas, and Florence ran after me and dragged me back, more or less by my ear. I once saw her threaten to call the cops on a cop. As long as these walls stood, they knew her name, but one wall is down and the second is going. Now I have to write her name, and she never did think much of poetry. And Guy, one of the oldest desk clerks, much too deaf to work, but he wouldn't believe it. Someone would come and ask for a room, and Guy would turn purple and yell, "You can't call me that!" and reach for a nightstick under the desk, and whoever was backing him would take it gently away. Were we all crazy? Mainly we were friends, and with friends it's not a pertinent question. And there was the building itself. There'd been a banquet room once, closed before I moved in. There was a TV room where we all came and tried to spot ourselves on the news. There were five floors of hot plates, pot plants, parties, people overnight, and never enough toilet paper. There were cockroaches, of course, but very clean cockroaches. I had a room with five walls and a view of the hills. I thought I would live there forever, and I thought I would live forever. A pile of rubble with pigeons circling. But when I close my eyes, I still see that rug in the lobby, red, maroon, blue looped, swirling. Everyone swore it was the first rug on acid. And I see the switchboard behind the desk, a tangle of beeping lines as the desk clerk snaps, "Hold on a sec, just hold on." And I'm holding, but it's hard. for the young men who died of AIDS. The dead lovers are almost as beautiful as razor-edged spaces in the air where they used to walk. Do you remember his hand lazily playing with the rim of a glass, making the ghost of a bell sound for his own ghost? And the talk didn't even pause. That glass is whole. Break it. Break it now. Break everything. How can people go on buying toothpaste and planning their summer vacations? Vegetables would care more. The potato has 1,000 eyes all morning for the lovers who lived in their deaths like a country foreign to everywhere for a long time before dying. A long time watching people look away. The potato only met them under the earth after their deaths, and still it wept, and we do not. The ghost bell makes barely a sound forever. The dead lovers are still in love, but no one else is. He took his hand with him. A grave is as good as a briefcase to keep the essentials in. A smile, bones, a way of biting at his lip just before looking into your eyes. Shoulder blades cutting into summer like butter. All the commuters in a rush hour traffic jam are cursing because the lovers are dying faster than their cars. The child sent to bed without dinner cries for the lovers, also sent to bed early and without. Unfair. Throw the dishes against the wall. Break them. The dead lovers are almost as beautiful as when they were alive. You can hear the rim of a glass tolling for the ghosts to come home. Break the glass. Break the ghosts. Pull down the sky. Break everything. Dance on the fragments. Scream their names. Get splinters of ghosts under your skin. Torn and bleeding because it hurts. Because it hurts so bad. Just out of jail. Write about me. He stops me on the street. Bright-colored Guatemalan shirt, luxurious cigarette, husky voice, insistent. Tell him I just got out. I was 3 years in jail. He takes a deep breath, hesitates. This is important. Tell him I hated being locked up. He bursts out indignantly and then shakes his head because the words don't say it. He looks at me doubtfully. It's spring. Some angry sparrows fight over pizza crumbs. There's a cardboard box full of free puppies with their eyes still filmy. A pretty girl talks to her friends and doesn't notice her strawberry yogurt's dripping to the sidewalk. Then she does and squeals. How could I possibly understand? 3 years. Try anyway, he says. You've got to tell them. You've just got to.
And that was Julia Vinograd in her first tape, Eye of the Hand, recorded this year, Michael Scott Studios, Piedmont, California. Her latest book is entitled Speed of Dark, published by Zeitgeist Press. And if you want to purchase a copy of that book, which is only $3, you can leave me a message at 423-4833 and I will get you access to her, or wander up to Berkeley on Telegraph Avenue and hang out at the Med where she sells the books, or look in any of the large bookshops on Telegraph. I don't know if Neil Coonerty's bookshop Santa Cruz, against whom I'm still conducting a boycott and who still bars me from his premises, carries Julia's work, but he might. And if he doesn't, give me a call and I can tell you where you can find it. Good poet. City Hall Sleepers protest ended last month, actually mid-October, but many of the cases are continuing. In fact, Gideon Cessna and Pat Ring, Pepper Tongue Pat as I call him, who kind of roves in and out of town from here to Humboldt, where he's engaged in Headwaters protest, kind of revolving jail door activity. He's also been jailed up there for fighting to preserve the last stand of the Redwoods. He and Gideon are facing sleep crime trials here in Santa Cruz in January, and he actually faces an earlier trial with that infamous bailiff, Deputy Thurber. Thurber has assaulted a number of people. He and Sandy Ring are only two of them, but he's also he's gone after me. He recently went after Patrick Lancelin. He's notorious among the bailiffs.
Rumor has it that he spends his off time engaged in mercenary activity over in South Africa, but I can't vouch for the truth of that rumor. All I know is if you do have information about Deputy Thurber and his misdeeds, I'm interested in publishing a wanted poster on this man. We did publish a wanted poster on Stuart Martin, a merchant downtown who manages the ID building and is notorious for his attacks on homeless people, going so far as to shove them, verbally abusing them, filing false police reports against them. And Deputy Thurber is another person who needs to be dealt with because he's in a position of some authority. Anyway, Pat and Gideon have forthcoming trials on not just the Thurber matter, but also, in Pat's case, but also sleep crimes. And they face misdemeanor jury trials, which are not just a rarity. They've never been done in the county of Santa Cruz, so I have my doubts as to whether they will be done this time. But the city attorney is pretending they will, and so we'll see if he goes along with that or whether he pulls back his horn since the City Hall sleepless protest is over. But more recently, about a week ago, Pat and Gideon came up to me with news about Zanatos and their latest harassment of homeless people around the food stamp area. And here's a discussion of that.
Hello.
Hey. And you guys say that, let's begin with Pat. Pat, you're telling me a tale of a grocery store.
Yeah, Zanatos.
Wonderful. This was last Friday?
Last Friday. I went in there in the daytime.
November 8th.
I went in there and I purchased some groceries, about $15 worth of stuff. I paid with food stamps. And I returned about 5 to 6 hours later to buy something else, to also buy with food stamps.
Booze? Tobacco?
Water.
Water.
A bottle of water. And they told me that you could only use food stamps in there one time in each day.
This was told you by a clerk or by a manager?
By the clerk.
Was she abusive or rude in telling you this?
No, not really. But then I had a few words to say, and I walked outside. First the clerk, another male clerk, came up to me and told me if I didn't leave that he would take me down. And I said, yeah, I'd like to see that, you little punk. Take me down. And I walked outside, which he followed me, and then the security guard came out. Mm-hmm. And they were both telling me that I had to leave, you know, and I was telling them, you know, what the fuck is up with you people, you know?
Did you catch the names of either of these two distinguished individuals?
No, I didn't, actually, no. And anyway, one thing led to another, and the security guard ends up pushing me.
Uh-huh.
And of course, somehow he ended up getting pushed back.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much the story.
So it turned into a pushing contest.
Yeah, I mean, the guy shoved me. Really hard.
You recognize this?
Yeah, I recognize them both.
Okay, so if we went back to Zanatos today, you could identify who these guards are.
I don't have time to do that. Yeah, I definitely know who they are.
There's been a lawsuit against Zanatos for doing this, actually for beating up somebody out front, for assaulting somebody. The assistant manager was successfully sued by Ed Fry, as a matter of fact.
And indeed, we actually interviewed the man who was so assaulted on my radio show about a year and a half ago. And Ed Fry got a settlement from a Zanatos employee and or the company. So there is a crackdown going on against people using food stamps. I've heard it from other people than simply Pat Ring. Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is talking about use of food stamps becoming more difficult, checking procedures becoming more elaborate. If you have been experiencing problems with using food stamps, and particularly recently, please let us know what's been going on at 423-HUFF. And if Zanatos or any other downtown businesses have been acting in a discriminatory fashion towards you as a consequence of your membership in a class of homeless people or poor people, please, similarly, give us a call and give us the details on your story. You could help the next person who may suffer the same kind of discrimination.
All right, it's November 14th, 1996. We're here at Cath Garden Pacific, and I'm talking to John
Spaulding. I tell you, sorry. Don't worry about it.
Right, and John has just given me a brief description, which I wish I had recorded properly. He's a man who collects cans and bottles. He was given an open container ticket on the beach in Santa Cruz within the last month.
Yeah.
Went to court, and in the court of Mulligan, presented evidence with witnesses and documents that he was, in fact, indeed a collector and recycler of cans and bottles. And the result was The judge volunteered, the referee, John Mulligan, volunteered to drop his fine from $190 to $230 or something?
$139.
And he said, wait a minute, I wasn't doing anything wrong. Police then gathered around him, in essence intimidating him in the courtroom, and told him, write a letter to what, God? I'm not quite sure. Who did they say?
I think it was Superior Court. One time I did this number, I brought it all the way to the state Supreme Court.
The same issue or another issue?
Oh, another issue.
Right.
You know, all the appellate briefs and everything.
Right.
But there just wasn't any way. I did the lawyer research on how to fight these things.
Right.
So I wasn't, you know, naive or the response available.
Right.
But when I got to the place where there was a response available, they said, well, you write this to this judge and they'll review it.
Right.
That is not an appeal. That is a letter that goes and comes back with the same verdict, because there's no technical law. They're claiming I had an open container. They're not explaining that I was collecting cans. There's no technicality that I could utilize.
Right. Although if there is, we need to find one, because you're not the only person that's having this kind of problem. You're working in the community service. Yeah. Well, thank you, John.
Yeah, really an odd thing. And the people on the beach were amazed. They saw me collecting cans, and so they knew I was collecting cans, and they were ready to give me an open container.
Have you suffered any other harassment recently by police?
No, in fact, the police department has been pretty good, and I'm surprised that the judge, I've never seen him pull an insult like that. I sat down there for many hours, and that was the first time I ever seen him just totally ignore. Twice I've seen him do it with an elder citizen and me, but it was really a surprise. I thought it was brought out.
I'm not surprised. I've seen Mulligan do this repeatedly to different kinds of people, different sorts of things. He's essentially a hanging judge, or you might even say sort of a... We call him Meat Grinder Mulligan, because he turns out fines like sausages.
I noticed that. But most of them have legitimate substances to them, as in regards, I've had an open container before, and it wasn't, didn't, no problem, we just took it off. So, the idea, I thought he'd throw it out.
Yeah! Sorry about that.
Yeah, really enlightened.
Thank you. Back at Cafe Pacific, it's Thursday, but yesterday, on Wednesday evening, something happened. What happened?
Me and my friend were sitting on a sidewalk, and I was giving him a quarter to use the phone. We stood up, and Marty Over came over and just started going through his pockets like as quick as he could. My friend was like, hey, you can't search me. It's like my right, you know, to have my personal, you know, private property in my pocket.
Officer Over say?
And he was like, well, I'm doing it right now. I'm searching right now. As he was going through his pockets and his hip pack and pulled out like a bowl that we were going to smoke and just took it and was like, leave for today. And
he said leave for
today. He just said leave for today.
And what did
my friend was like, yeah, I was going to smoke that, but now I'm not because you're taking it. And he was like, well, you have this all packaged up like a 20 bag, like you're going to sell it and blah, blah, blah. People come down here with their kids to buy stuff from the farmer's market and you're out here selling dope. And they're like, dude, we were just sitting here, and, you know, I was giving him a quarter to use the phone and you just came up and went through his pockets and
stuff. On what basis did he go through his pockets? Did he have a search clause? Was he on parole or probation?
No, nothing. He was just, we were just sitting there.
I see. So it was just police discretion.
Yeah.
Basic
illegal search.
Right.
That's why I didn't give him a ticket, is because there's an illegal search and, you know, you could just fight it and
win. That's strong arm theft, really.
Just pretty much stole his herb to smoke it, probably.
Your first name is?
Tyler.
And Tyler, is he interested in filing a complaint against the police department on this one?
I don't know, he might be.
Tell him that Monday of next week, you can do that. Monday through Wednesday, or through Thursday, police review board's open.
And indeed, the police review board meets once a month, every Monday. I've kind of decided to leave the police review board's public meetings until such time as I can actually bring a number of people who can essentially make a loud and rather angry outcry against what's going on down in the mall, since they don't seem to hear the polite complaints. Although I will say that the staff of the Citizens Police Review Board, which is open from 9 to 1 every Monday through Thursday, is very polite and they try to be helpful. But again, the problem is the board itself is obsessively concerned with minor legalisms, has no real will to combat police department improprieties, and seems to be also stacked with people who are, if not pro-police, certainly not willing to be vigilantly pro-citizen. Our latest There are two vacancies open on the Citizens Police Review Board for those who are interested in joining. They have to be appointed by city council members, one of whom will be a former Citizens Police Review Board person, Michael Hernandez. One election as the only new face on city council. I have grave misgivings about Hernandez's tenure coming up. I think he's a stooge for Scott Kennedy. I was aghast at his performance on the Citizens Police Review Board when he essentially voted for everything and anything the police department wanted. And that's part of the downside, the election results, as well as the fact that the City Hall sleepers protest is now sort of a memory, and we're in the midst of rain and problems, and ongoing police harassment downtown, as you've heard from officers Over and Eveleth, straight from the horse's mouth. We've had on the show, you've heard at least two or three reports from October and November, the kind of harassment taking place. And also, there's a downright deaths going on, too. People are dying. In the last 2 weeks, I believe it's now 8 to 10 homeless people who have died, including 3 or 4 from heroin overdoses, one choking on his own vomit. I'm not quite sure if that was an alcoholism or some other failure of services. A guy who died in police custody at Eric Circle and California a week or two ago. Another death up at Ben Lomond was mentioned in a small, brief blurb in the Sentinel. And there was a death several weeks ago. In addition to that, I'm kind of giving you a quick culling through my memory. I'm hoping to have some of this information out in my little seen but still remembered publication, The Street Shit Sheet, a homeless newsletter which I'm working on. And of course, we are doing regular articles for the Oakland homeless newspaper Street Spirit, which you can get a copy of for $1, or if you're homeless, so we might even lay a few on you to sell, to give a call to 423-HUFF. 423-4833. You can also write for Street Spirit. Again, call the same number, 423-HUFF, if you have something you want to put into Street Spirit, either poetry, a graphic, a story, or some real-life experience on the streets here in Santa Cruz. So deaths have been happening, and more deaths will be happening as the weather grows colder and there is no campground, and the City Council continues to fuddle around on the issue. There's the current scandal around this is that Sycamore Grove in the Poganip, an area just up Highway 9, has for years been looked at as a possible homeless campsite by activists from as far back as the mid-80s, when Jane Imler did her historic hunger strike that established the Cedar Street Open Air Shelter, a cold and rainy night shelter, the first of its kind, the first drop-in center that opened up in 1985 in the winter because of her 33-day hunger strike. Or so. At that time, however, she also wanted a campground for homeless people in the Poganip, and we've been pushing that too. When they were talking about closing down, eventually did close down the Coral Street Open Air Shelter last year, many of us, including Sherry Connival, Barbara Riverwoman, Michael Sheridan, Daniel Hopkins, looked for a campground in the Poganip. And we were told by environmentalist Celia Scott and Catherine Byers that, oh no, that was not possible, that the Parks and Rec had decided that that would be a violation of this or that environmental regulation or a violation of the general plan. Well, Frank Pusilek, community house director, who otherwise were on the opposite sides on that one, on that community house, it's a big boondoggle and a scandal too. But Pusilek is also interested in a campground, or says he is. And he has investigated and has found out that the report supposedly referred to by council members Scott and Byers, that saying that the Poganip Sycamore Grove is not a possible place for a campground because of environmental problems, actually refers to a drive-in trailer park, not a walk-in campground. That was what the Parks and Rec Department found. But they were afraid that making a drive-in trailer park with a turnaround space would result in the destruction of too many trees. But no one's ever been interested in that. Rather, they've been interested in a walk-in campground for homeless people on maybe 1 acre of those 500 and some odd acres that are available up there. And of course, one would think it amazing that such a mistake could have been made and maintained by so long by supposedly liberal city council members like Celia Scott. But that seems to have been the case, and now we'll see if these people will rectify their errors and actually move to open some kind of a campground, which of course is what's needed. People want to put pressure on city council to do something fast about this before more people die. of exposure or drug abuse or something else. And indeed, people are much more likely to die of drug abuse if they're off somewhere on their lonesome than if they're in, for example, a campground that's near services, as many people were last year during the Coral Street campground's last days. And the bad mouthing that that campground took, and the smear job that was done in it by Kennedy and Rapkin and Daryl Darling, Paul Lee, Paul Merceau, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Bureaucrats who were running it, was quite something. In order to get the true story about that, you really have to talk to the people who lived there and who worked there. And unfortunately, one of them is gone, Ron Howard, who actually helped to keep that campground open for as long as he could while at the same time working for the Citizens Committee, has disappeared. And if anybody knows where he is, I sure as heck would like to know where he is. He's been absent for 2 months, and no one knows. It just sort of disappeared one day. However, the campground is, of course, the issue for, I think, that's still on the table, particularly since Community House will not be beginning its construction until March or April. I think people should reclaim that property. As I said back in the spring, jump the fence and pitch your tents. Now, people are dying, and one particular person actually was murdered, as you may know if you've been following the news. Martin Estrada, Hispanic man, homeless, lived outside, drunk, was murdered under the Soquel Avenue Bridge on October 1st. So still no suspects on that in that case. Many of his, I won't say friends, because I don't know if any of us really knew him personally, but those of us concerned about the rights of homeless people held a memorial march. And here are some of the highlights of that march held in mid-October. The first voice you hear is that of Becky Johnson.
And we, people of conscience, want to gather together and commemorate that. They're commemorating the recent death of Martin Estrada, a homeless person who died underneath the Soquel Avenue Bridge. But he is just the latest in a long list of homeless people that have died in our town and our county and are currently suffering under the cruel sleeping ban. So I encourage each and every one of you, we have black ribbons here like this, cut a little piece and pin it on, and commemorate the suffering and deaths of homeless people. When we get to the Soquel Avenue Bridge, we'll be throwing flowers off in memory of Martin Estrada. Thank you.
It goes like this. If you see me sitting on your street and I panhandle you, don't walk on by. Spare me some change. Don't leave me sitting and crying because you passed me by, saying, get a job. And if you see me sleeping on the river bank, don't walk on by. Shoot me in the head and let me die. I hate this world and the way it is.
Visiting was inspired, I got a flyer and just want to promote solidarity that homelessness is just not an issue in Santa Cruz, but it's everywhere here in this country. And up where I come from, they enacted a no sitting ordinance to deal with the homeless issue there, and they harass the homeless by moving them constantly. And what it has resulted up there is a desperate and dangerous place for homeless people, especially women. Women now have to not sit and camp in visible places, but have to hide from the police, and in hiding from the police become victims of criminals as well, you know, and that's the real issue, is that these solutions that they are providing aren't dealing with the real issues of homelessness, but they're only perpetuating a continued homelessness and giving more power to the state to harass us all and to attack our rights instead of dealing with the inherent problems that caused us in the first place.
That's right. Thank you very much.
spirit of a funeral, because these people did not receive a funeral. They barely received any attention in the media, and they're basically invisible to the rest of society. It's up to us to keep the memory of the people that are just disappearing by the wayside of society. It's up to us to keep the memory of these people alive. If we don't, nobody will. Yeah, there are at least, what, we have six people mentioned in this rally that have died of exposure, alcoholism, or violence attributable to homelessness. There are actually probably more than 100 that have died in Santa Cruz for that. We don't even know who they are. Maybe in the next few weeks we can get more of their names together.
Also, if there would have been shelter for the people in Santa Cruz and the tent city had not been closed down, many of these people and many people that we do not know would not be dead today. We only have a handful of names right now, but we know that there's at least dozens of people that have died since the tent city closed because there was no place close to a nurse's station, and we helped the weak ones when they were weak, and now there's no way of doing that. Everybody's out on their own in the woods, hiding here and there and dying all over the place. Thank you, Dan.
It's 10 after 3, or 5 after 3. We've reached the New Leaf Market, apparently in March. 25, 30 of us. Dan, King speaks.
We're entering a police state here in the United States. I think the police have overstepped their boundaries. I think that even though they think they're enforcing the laws, actually they're persecuting the poor of this country. And if we have to stand up and fight, then I think that we're going to have to stand up and fight against this kind of oppression. So it's coming down to a battle of the minds. Thank you.
I'm here today because I feel like a lot of people, especially homeless people, poor people, go unrecognized by the community. And all these people with the signs, all these deaths that you see on the signs, all people that have gone without funerals, without people caring about their deaths. And as a community member, that's why I'm here today, is because I care. I care that people are dying with no one to help them. People are having to hide in bushes where they're vulnerable to people beating them with baseball bats, stabbing them in the head with knives, dying of hypothermia because they're caught underneath a bridge and can't get out. This is the things that are going on in our community and nobody's doing anything about it. And I'm angry. I'm really glad to be here. I love you all.
We are in downtown Santa Cruz in the middle of the shopping season. In a city that makes it illegal for people to sleep at night. Yeah. It's okay to shop during the day, but if homeless people sit down on the street, they're subject to arrest.
That's right. Yeah.
If homeless people ask peacefully for spare change, not abusively, but peacefully, they're subject to $162 tickets. Yeah. The Santa Cruz City Council and the downtown merchants are responsible for these laws.
Yeah.
It's laws like these and the law that makes it illegal to sleep at night that produces the unsafe conditions that resulted in the murder of Martin Estrada on October 1st. He was stabbed repeatedly in the neck on the levee, where he was hiding from police, hiding from the city's sleeping ban.
Dang.
Has the mayor declared a state of emergency?
No!
Has the mayor declared there shall be a safe place for people to sleep?
No!
So this,
the opposite of it.
Has the mayor even considered any minor change in a law that makes it completely illegal for 500 to 1,500 people who have to be outside to sleep at night?
No!
That's why we're here!
Right.
This has got to be changed.
Yeah.
And we are a small group of people. And we're trying to bring it to everybody's attention downtown, including people who are otherwise sympathetic to this town, who would like to see it an economic success, but not over the dead bodies of homeless people.
Yeah. Many people say that it's a hopeless struggle. It's futile. The capitalist oppressors are too strong. They're too powerful. They've got too much support. They can't be done. Well, I'll tell you something. You may not believe in your ability to overthrow the system or overcome oppression. You may not do it, but they sure as hell are scared to death of it. That's all they think about. They're scared to death of the LA Rebellion. They're scared to death of people of color organizing. Yeah. Why do you think they make severe laws for us resisting? Why do you think they pass laws to keep you throw us in jail for long periods of time? Why do you think they have three strike laws? Why do you think they oppress people of color? Because they're scared to death. Every night these capitalist pigs go to bed worrying that one day we're going to overthrow them. They go to bed in fear. They know that we're rising up. They saw the LA Rebellion succeed. They saw us rise up and do something. They know what's happening. You're saying an imperialist power is in decline, okay?
That's right.
And they're in fear, and they're trying to psych us out that they're going to, you know, win, but they're not.
No.
Look around, and we're not going to take it. We're going to take the victory from them, okay? You see it happening. We have a consumer revolt. We become informed jurors and we shut the drug war down. We start to build our community ourselves. It's like an abusive relationship where your father is beating you. You don't sit there and try to reform your father. You don't wait for him to have passion and sympathy. You leave and you start your own community. You say, fuck the machine, and you do it yourself.
We're on the bridge, we're just on the flowers over into the San Lorenzo River, and we're going to walk back to Cinema 9, and we have about 20 people, with many with signs. We're going to first walk to where we're going to guess where Martin Estrada was stabbed, walk down there. Many people watch this as we walk the line. At least 100, 150 people took flyers.
They were working with local police.
It's more than ironic that the same people that we're talking about being disposed of in these different ways are referred to in the media that we read for information as human trash.
Yeah.
That's how our local journalists talk about these people.
Yeah.
So is it any wonder when people get burned and get swept away and get killed without anybody noticing, when that's how we've come to look at people? And they're getting killed and we're getting used to it. That's what's really scary.
Yeah. We
have people here in this group that have been denied medical care. People who have collapsed from sleep exhaustion. Man over there sitting on the rock is... his jaw was wired shut for 2 months because he fell down, exhausted from months at the vigil without sleep, and then was essentially refused, pain medication at Dominican Hospital? That's Gideon over there. And he's still here. He didn't give up.
Thomas right now can't get any AFDC because he can't find her birth certificate. She hasn't got AFDC for 2 months. She's in her third trimester. By the time she gets AFDC, it's going to be taken away from her. I mean, she's not going to get as much. They're cutting it now because she has to reapply, so she's not going to get what she got before, which was barely enough to rent a room in Santa Cruz. They give her $70 worth of food stamps a month. She's pregnant. $70 worth of food stamps. I mean, that's not very much. You know, and maybe $300-something for AFDC. That doesn't go very far, you know, in this economy, or, you know, especially renting in Santa Cruz. And, you know, having to deal with the stress of being homeless and then now being refused AFDC and not giving any alternative except to go into a shelter, you know, where there's all those is like, you know, tuberculosis. I mean, you're like jammed in these rooms with all these people. I mean, that's no place for, you know, pregnant women or anybody to be, you know. And that's why we need to be able to come together as a community to help one another out, you know. Like, you know, whether it's, you know, sharing our homes, you know, like making a bed. If you don't have a loft, make a loft, you know, or whatever, you know, like we did at our house. And you know, feeding these people, we need to come together as a community because we can't expect the government to take care of us because they're not going to. I mean, why I'm out here is not because I'm mad at the government, because they're just everything I expected them to be. They've never changed. They're the same as they always were. They came from England and they're still the same. What all these people escaped from, they're the same thing. It's the same thing going on. And, you know, what I care about is waking up the community to what's going on. Yeah. That's what I care about. I care about waking people up to the reality of what it means to be a community and coming together to help one another and getting out of this isolated, hypnotic state that we're in, you know? And it's really, really important to me. That's, if there's anyone to be angry at, I'm angry at the community. Really am. That's where, you know, I want people to wake up. And we can start coming together and taking care of each other.
I'd like to say a few words about my friend in Parkland, Brian Starr, who committed suicide 4 months ago.
Not Morgan Feinstein.
Hers is a powerful feminist voice in the psychiatric inmates liberation movement, in the homeless movement, in the labor movement. She was a teacher in elementary schools. She was a musician, a poet, a free radio programmer. She published a zine called Lunatic Fringe, which she distributed worldwide and got responses worldwide, exchanging zines worldwide, including zines, including correspondence with the women in Fontana Prison. The loss of Morgan affects me deeply. I know it affects other people here as people. I miss her every day. I wish she were here. She's not. She made her choice. It was like the only choice she could make. She suffered from chronic fatigue immune deficiency syndrome. She was at the extreme end of her energies. She could bathe herself every other day, and that would be the end of her energy for that day. We shared many conversations where I had the opportunity to open my mind to raise my consciousness.
Press conference and announce this to the press so that the whole community knows that we're not going to take this shit.
Yeah.
You know, so that the perpetrators who are out there enjoying their lack of apprehension will know that it's not going to happen again. Yeah. That we're going to be in their face with whistles, with pepper spray, with rocks, and just look around us. If those four people who are sleeping in the same place that each picked up a rock and stood together united in the face of this threat, our brother would not be dead.
Yeah.
You know, simple things, instead of panic, just simple rational thinking, what can I do to take care of myself?
Yeah.
There's still many, many things we can do to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the 70s, I lived in San Francisco at Ambassador Hotel at the top floor at the corner of Mason and Eddy. I used to walk all over town at night. I'd walk out over to North Beach and out through the Broadway tunnel and turn left on Polk and walk down Polk. And somewhere in the first couple of three doorways, I'd pass a man standing there. And the street would be deserted. It'd be like 3 a.m. after the bars had closed. And I walk on down a little further, and over on the other side of the street was a man standing in the doorway. And the same in the next block, and the next block, and every block of Polk Street all the way to the Federal Building. Because there'd been a wave of violence against gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender people up there. And so they organized, and that's how they solved that problem. They had those whistles that he showed us.
Yeah. Self-defense classes, and I think we should all know how to defend ourselves and fight. So the city of Santa Cruz, there are a set of classes coming up this month, all different times, and they're free for Santa Cruz City residents. And if you don't have a home, we can arrange an address to present to them. Okay, so I suggest that everyone know how to defend themselves.
One side, it feels so like much anger and the hatred for oppression and fire that just like rots the bottom of my core. But on the other side, I feel this tremendous love for the human race and this profound thing it is to be human and be of the human spirit, where, you know, people have overcome just phenomenal things. I mean, what people have been able to do throughout history just to survive a tremendous attacks and atrocities perpetrated by criminals is just, it's amazing. And like, just what you said, it's just real simple solutions. And I don't mean that condescending. I mean just simple solutions for problems that when we put our heads together, there are all kinds of things that we can come up with, but we've been so beaten down and taught that we don't think correctly, and we don't have the answers, and there are no answers. And
all that's garbage. You know, we really need to be able to come together and unite and share ideas with each other, all of our ideas, and find out what are the ideas that are most effective, because they're all solutions to all these problems.
No matter what color you are, women are oppressed everywhere in every country. No matter what ethnic race, women are oppressed. And in Nepal, they have really, really, really strict abortion laws in Nepal. If a woman's baby is born stillborn, she goes to prison for murdering her child. Mm. If her baby is born, like if she has a natural abortion, like it aborts itself, the woman goes to jail for prison for maybe 20 years or more. The women face really harsh prison sentences, much worse than the men. Their jails are worse. They get maybe a pound, that maybe not even that, of rice a day. That's all they get. That's including with rocks in it they have to pick out. They're given a slab to lay on, no clothes. Sometimes the winters get below zero in Nepal, and their children are jailed with them. The average childbirth for women in Nepal is 6 children apiece. They don't have money to have children. A lot of the women don't want to have that many children. They would rather have abortions, and if they're caught in any kind of, you know, mix-up, a lot of them go to like illegal abortionists, which may be aborting the child with cut glass. I mean, these people are doing it out of desperation, economic desperation. They are too poor to feed their children, and they would rather kill it. And in turn, they kill themselves.
And that was Liz of the Revolutionary Coalition, which helped sustain the City Hall Sleepers vigil for a lot of the time towards the end, and is now holding regular meetings, Monday nights, Wednesday night forums, Thursday night at 10:22 North Pacific at Red Is Art. You are listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'll be back with you again soon. Give me a call at 423-4833 or 423-HUFF if you have something you want to put on this show. I will put it on the show, particularly if it concerns the rights of poor people. Thank you for being with me. I hope that you'll join me again next time. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.